values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, in honor of our next guest, we have dubbed her the Blonde Reaper. She joins us again, Kristen Vents, KB Advisory Group. We're making a little light here, Kristen, about what's going on, because you always are sharing what has been bad news for the last year. But this is a serious issue. I mean, where you and I started talking about this behind the scenes a year ago to where we are, could you even have pictured how quickly we'd get to where we are?
No, it's funny. I was talking to another colleague of mine this morning, and I said, you know, during the pandemic, I was never worried about the economy, right? You were just worried about, am I going to get this thing? How long are things going to be locked down? When will things go back to normal? But no one was really worried about the economy. Now, I am more worried about the economy than I've been, you know, since the Great Recession. So that speaks volumes.
So, you know, the word recession seems to me, anyway, like such a political word right now that it's kind of got political capital attached to it one way or the other. But in reality, what are we in a recession? And what does it mean to the average consumer out there?
Okay, so I'm going to drop some knowledge on you. I know it's a lot for a Friday for a holiday weekend, but a technical recession is 3/4 of negative GDP. Okay, so that's negative gross domestic product. We're about there. I personally, because I tend to see things earlier, because I came out of the retail industry where your horizon is about 6 months out, 8 months out, what I'm seeing in consumer behavior, the way stocks are reacting, the way people are spending or not spending their money, we're in it. So you can use what kind of technical economic terms that you want, but based on what I'm seeing, we're already there. And it's funny because all of these pundits on TV, me excluded, obviously, are now saying, oh my goodness, we couldn't believe that, you know, inflation was this bad. All these people that were calling it transitory, if you remember that little word back a few months ago, now they're really realizing the impacts are much worse than they thought. And what does that mean for the consumer? So here's the thing. All of this inflation is basically a tax on the middle class. Okay. But now it's inflationary in every area of one's life. So it becomes psychological. You know, you're going to the store or to the grocery store to feed your family. You're filling up to go to work twice a week. And it becomes psychological. And I don't care if you're the 1% or you're on the lowest end economically, it is hitting you. It's tough. So it's going to be rough out there. And consumers, as you saw in May, consumer spending that just came out this week, are retrenching.
Right.
Okay. So that's scary.
So what is the reason behind it? Is it because people are afraid to spend money, or is it that they don't have money? Is it a combination of both? What is it?
Well, you know, Americans, like, that's our, you know, retail therapy, right? Just makes you feel better to buy stuff, buy stuff for your family, buy stuff for yourself, treat yourself, you know, self-care. That's the American way, right? So we're going to keep on spending. They're not afraid to spend. They're afraid to pay for it. Okay. So, you know, people are traveling. I think the TSA said they logged more, you know, customers last weekend than they have in, you know, pre-pandemic. So people are traveling, they're flying. We don't know how long that's going to be. So these vacations that you booked when you were flush with cash during the pandemic, once you get back and you've got to pay for that and you're back to school, things are really going to start getting rough. And you're going to see what we call in the industry demand destruction. So people aren't going to drive. They're just not going to do it. They'll just quit gassing up. They'll just, you know, there comes a point when you're like, you know what? I'm going to take the light rail. I'm going to take public transit because this is crazy.
Kristen Bench joins us. She is with KB Advisory Group. She actually is KB Advisory Group and her company. and let's talk about Wall Street. Does Wall Street have confidence that this administration or the Fed is going to be able to fix this problem?
So here's the thing. They have no confidence in the administration. So you have a feckless president, you have a feckless Fed, and when they first started raising rates last week, okay, you saw the market kind of fly because they're like, okay, this is great. We're going to, you know, wrap up inflation. We're going to tamp this stuff down. But I think the further out that you look at things and comments from our president saying consumers are just going to have to bear with gas inflation as long as it takes. Are you kidding me? No. So if you're looking at the markets today and for the week and for the year, they don't have confidence.
And so what does that mean long term? You know, the headlines are we've had the worst 6 months, or the first half of the year was the worst since 1970 on Wall Street. But what does that mean long term for us? What does it make long term for people that are putting money away for retirement?
Well, the way that I invest and how I advise my clients, I'm always in it for the long haul. So my horizons are very long, right? They're always 6 months, 8 months out. So I'm a holder. I'm not a day trader. That is not what I do. So you want to pick those stocks that are bellwethers and stick there and hold them, right? So it's not a good time for stocks, but if you really know how to pick your stocks, like my favorites, like Restoration Hardware, RH, or Nike, or LVMH, these are strong companies with superior managements that have a cult-like following. They're luxury stocks. They're a little bit more resilient. And they all reported this week, but they also guided down. So what they're saying is, look, our business is great. We're growing. But the horizon for the next year ain't good. So I would buy them when they're on the dip and then hold them. So for investors out there that are looking for bright spots, and there's always a bright spot, you just have to know how to find it. So I would look for those strong companies, buy the stocks while they're beaten down because they're great companies, and then hold.
I got to tell you, I always love the information, and there was a little bit of good news in there for a change. I appreciate the updates. I want you to tell people how to find you and where they can find you on social media, because you put out some great information.
Well, thank you. So on Twitter, I'm at Kristen Benz. And that's Kristen with two I's. And then on Instagram, if you like visual stuff, I'm at Kristen C. Benz. And there are a lot of like weirdo imposter accounts. I don't know what's going on with Instagram. So I only have one. And I will not DM you or send you crypto.
Yeah, I have actually seen one of those accounts, and I knew it wasn't you. But it's really funny how they use your image and your name quite a bit. And you're one of their favorites.
Yeah. It's flattering, but it's also psycho. So I don't know how I should handle that. But I will tell you one thing, Mike Broomhead. I need more cowbell.
Yes, you do. And every time you come on, that is going to be your walk-up music for the rest of the time you're on this show.
I was robbed. I should have been in baseball. Okay,
right.
This is what I can do.
Thanks, Kristen. I appreciate it.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Happy 4th. That is Kristen Benz, KB Advisory Group. And again, I think I know she is brilliant when it comes to what's happening in the world and why it's happening. And so great conversation. Just give you a little information of where we are, where she believes we're going. And we'll continue to catch up with her in a moment. Does the governor of New York have any idea what she's talking about when it comes to concealed carry permits and guns? She's asked a question. Her answer, even if you're not a gun owner, is going to shock you. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Crime and punishment, big topic on the show. What are people able to do to defend themselves? What should someone be able? What rights do you have? What access should you have? In the case that came down recently about concealed carry permits in the state of New York, and that if you don't have to give the government a good reason. They can require you to go through a permitting process, but you don't have to give them a good reason why you want to carry a concealed weapon. You just have to qualify to carry a concealed weapon, whatever those rules are. And, you know, it's easier here in Arizona. You don't even need a permit. And now, I'm not saying I don't suggest that. I think a concealed carry permit is valuable. There's a level of training on the laws and the responsibilities. There's also reciprocity with other states. But here in Arizona, if you legally own a handgun, you can conceal it. We changed that law years ago, and much to the dismay of many people that thought we were going to have blood in the streets and gunfights in the bars. And that really hasn't happened. And statistically speaking, we know that states that are very lenient with guns do not have higher crime rates than states that are, or cities, and in many cases, cities like Chicago and D.C. with very restrictive gun laws are the highest crime rates around and very high murder rates. So it isn't the allowing good people to have guns that is the problem. So the New York governor, she was being interviewed. She was being talked to. She was doing a press conference. I want you to hear a couple of things. She was asked in this interview about concealed carry holders and her talking about them committing crimes. And so she's being asked, do you have the data? Do you have proof that concealed carry owners, if you have more concealed carry permits, there's more crime?
Do you have the numbers to show that it's the concealed carry permit holders that are committing crimes? Because the lawful gun owner will say that you're attacking the wrong person. It's really people that are getting these guns illegally that are causing the violence, not the people going and getting the permit legally. And that's the basis for the whole Supreme Court argument. Do you have the numbers?
I don't need to have numbers. I don't have to have a data point to point to say that this is going to make. All I know is I have a responsibility to the people of this state to have sensible gun safety laws. And this one was not devised by the Hochul administration. It comes out of an administration from 1908. I don't need a data point to make the case that I have a responsibility to protect the people of this state.
Okay, no, you don't. You have a responsibility to allow people to protect themselves as well. We have police. We live in a civilized society. We all understand that, and we want that. I want that. But, you know, the old saying still works, as cliche as it is. You need a cop. Sometimes they're minutes away. I've talked about this before, and I'm not going into the details. I got into a fight with two guys at a store trying to stop a shoplifting, and I ended up fighting two guys in a parking lot until the police showed up. The response time by the police, by Phoenix PD at that time, I think that night, it was about 4 minutes. It took 4 minutes for the cops to get there. It was the longest 4 minutes of my life. Now, you think about a confrontation where it's life-threatening. You think about a shootout, which is usually over in about 2 seconds. You think about somebody that's trying to break into your home. You think about someone that's trying to steal your car, trying to carjack you, mug you. I am all for. I am in favor. I will dial 911. I do not want to have to solve a problem myself. And I think that's the vast majority of us. We live in a civilized society. But we also have a right to protect ourselves until the cops get there. And it's the same principle with a fire. And I don't know why people don't see it that way. I have a fire extinguisher. That doesn't mean that I'm hoping my kitchen catches on fire. And I'm not a professional firefighter. Call the pros, right? And I will. I'll dial 911, but I'm going to do my best to put that fire out until the professionals get there. I mean, that's just a simple principle. For the governor of New York to say, I don't need a data point, means she doesn't have one. That you are just so wrong. The opinions based in the ignorance about guns and gun owners is what my problem is. You may not ever change your mind, but at least you should be knowledgeable of the people that you're pushing against. And she has no clue. And you can also hear in that cut in her voice, and we're going to play more of this later, that she has no desire. She has absolutely no desire to understand. Guns are bad. Guns are evil. Why do you need one? What's the question, right? For the love of God, why would anybody need an AR-15? That principle in their mind is insane. I've used the analogy of a sports car. Maserati, McLaren, Corvette, Mustang. You know, you have somebody just got pulled over somewhere. I can't remember where it was, doing 169 miles an hour. For the love of God, why do you need a vehicle that goes that fast? No one ever asks that question. The speed limit, the fastest you can go in this country, I think on any freeway, is 85 miles an hour somewhere. Here in Arizona, I believe it's 75 miles an hour is what the speed limit is. And I think anything over 80 miles an hour is considered criminal speed. I believe that's true. So if the fastest you can go on any freeway in America is 85 miles an hour, why do you need a car that can do 185 miles an hour? Same question. Same question. The problem is, in the minds of others that don't know anything about firearms, that know nothing about guns, guns have one purpose, and that's to injure and kill. They're bad on their face. They're evil implements, and you don't need them. We want the government to have them. We want the cops to have them. And that's the other argument I make about firearms is if my local police department needs this equipment, then I need it. Because if they're worried that in a horrible situation where they're outgunned could be different, but that's why they have AR-15s or that platform, that style of rifle. It's why SWAT teams have them. If it's when you watch DPS on our freeways, you can see DPS motorcycles are equipped with a holder for an AR-15 type rifle. And you, so if you, you know, state troopers, the motor officers are working traffic accidents and they are stopping people for speeding. They're doing interdiction like that. Why would a motor officer need an AR-15? It's a dumb question. You don't know why. When are you ever going to need that? I don't know. And as long as local law enforcement needs it as a part of their standard equipment, why wouldn't I, as a homeowner or as a private citizen, in case I had to protect myself? And if they would just talk to people, they would realize that we are not crazy, aggressive, angry, want to get in a shootout people. And that's the impression the governor of New York has about gun owners. And she's wrong. She's absolutely wrong. We're going to talk with Yuma County Supervisor Jonathan Lines in just a couple of moments. We're going to get an update on what's happening at the border, so stick around for it.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. Happy Friday. Happy Independence Day weekend. We're thrilled that you are with us. The struggles in southern Arizona have been getting worse over the past year. We've talked with Jonathan Lines from Yuma County quite a bit, and we're talking with him again. Jonathan, welcome back to the show. Let's start with what happened at the border. You were there yesterday. Were you down on the border last night?
Yeah, we just went down there briefly last night and did not see a whole lot of activity because of the heat. Most of the people that are coming across are amassing throughout the night and love to come in early in the morning.
Are you expecting, well, first of all, you were pretty overwhelmed with the surge that you've been seeing. Are you expecting it to get worse in your area if they end this Remain in Mexico plan, or is it not going to affect Yuma as much?
It shouldn't affect Yuma significantly. Most of what we're seeing, Mike, are the people who are expelled under Title 42, and that is still happening. We send a plane out of Yuma every couple of days. And many of these people that are coming across are able to be repatriated to their home countries under Title 42. And that's actually cut down on the flow from some of those countries. And in speaking with Border Patrol, the Remain in Mexico policy, they are actually not having to expel very many people. Because of that, we may see a surge specifically from Mexico being next door, but they don't anticipate that it will change the overall pattern that we're seeing here in this area.
There were some pictures recently that I saw online of one Border Patrol agent in Yuma with hundreds of people to be processed. And the caption was that there was only one Border Patrol agent or a federal agent available for these hundreds of people in their processing. Was that the case? And is it still the case? Are they still that overwhelmed at the border?
We are still overwhelmed. Our numbers have actually dropped a little bit because of the heat. So instead of being, you know, 1,000 or more plus a day, we're in that 700 range, and that's still ludicrous. Federal government is still not doing their job. However, one of the promises and commitments that Mayorkas made to me while he was here was to provide additional federal support. And so in this area, we've had at a minimum 200 other federal agents coming in, and they are doing most of the processing, and Border Patrol has been out on the line. And what I've seen personally is double the amount of agents that are out there. They are going after the people with bad intentions. They're going after the people who are, you know, we would consider bad actors and those who are smuggling. And so I am very grateful for the changes that we've seen in this area, and maybe that's been one of the deterrents for some of the numbers going down.
Sheriff Daniels in Cochise County was on with Arizona's Morning News yesterday and was lamenting how bad it is with these smugglers. Many times they're juveniles, but these smugglers that are bringing people over. And he said they ran into one smuggler twice in one night that he had been turned loose. Are you seeing that there as well?
No, we are not. And actually, as part of the disruption, local DHS, Border Patrol, they actually lateral people out of Yuma and send them to other areas so that they're not able to go back to immediately what they were doing if they've been returned to Mexico. So with those lateral movements and lateral transfers have caused a disruption and a slowdown.
So are you seeing improvement, which is a good thing. Do you expect that in the fall it's going to ramp back up, or do you think now the federal government is actually sending more resources your way and they can help slow this down?
We are seeing the federal contractors back on the ground. We know that we're still waiting for some of the contracts to be signed. And one of the commitments that was made to us was to plug the gaps, specifically at the dam and some of the other open areas. And that's happened. And as Governor Ducey announced, we have actually already started putting up our own wall in certain areas, Mike, which has been fun to see.
So what about local law enforcement? How is local law enforcement, I would say first responders in general, because I know that there's rescue efforts and things that are also done. How are your resources in that regard holding up?
You know, that's still a struggle. And because of the heat, a lot more 911 calls come in. People find themselves in trouble. The deaths continue to rise. We've had, I believe that we are double our amount of deaths coming through the desert from last year. So I think that we're approaching 40 some odd people who have passed away in the last 4 months as they have come through the southern part of the border. And that's typically, Mike, where we get some of the bad actors and most of the narcotics, fentanyl being smuggled up.
That was going to be my next question, was about the drugs and the interdiction. We heard a statistic about Arizona being, I think it was Sheriff Daniels that said this, Arizona is the worst in fentanyl incidents in the country. Arizona is the worst in the country right now. What's happening in Yuma in that regard?
We're still seeing some of that. However, our law enforcement, working with Mexican law enforcement, they were actually able to shut down a fentanyl press where they compounded the drugs in San Luis Rio, Colorado, 2.5 weeks ago. And so we've seen a little bit of a slowdown, not much. It doesn't take much for them to kind of rebuild. We're still seeing, I believe, 100% increase in the narcotics that we are able to interdict with the state border task force working in conjunction with local law enforcement.
How are your resources, some of your charitable organizations, food banks, how are they holding up? Because I know they were strained for a while as well.
You know, we have a large homeless population here, and we also have a significant amount of people kind of passing through. And so when you compound it with people who show up directly at some of these areas, yes, it continues to be a strain and a struggle. Last Monday, we had a line that stretched almost half of a mile long at our food bank. And some of those people, it was determined that they were illegal and we cannot process program food for them. So they end up some of the other agencies in the area.
I appreciate the update as always. We wanted to touch base. You are always, you know, finger on the pulse of what's happening. And up here in the valley, we talk about it. But I wanted to hear from someone that's facing it on the front lines. And I always appreciate you doing it. And I hope you have a good Independence Day.
You too, Mike. Happy Independence Day.
Thanks. That is Jonathan Lyons calling from Yuma. And again, it is improvement, which is great news. We're happy about that. But as he said, they're still overwhelmed. They're still dealing with a great deal. And just an update from what's happening there. How much power should regulatory agencies have? One Supreme Court justice says they should have a lot more power. Why she believes that? We'll talk about both next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
And thanks for being here. Yesterday, the Supreme Court handed down a decision which said the Biden administration cannot use the Environmental Protection Agency to implement rules in capping carbon emissions from plants. And so environmentalists are very angry about this. They're happy about some decisions. They're angry about others. And this was a 6-3 decision. And in the minority, in the dissenting group of three, Elena Kagan, Justice Kagan, had a scathing, I want you to hear part of this report, an ABC report, scathing rebuke of what the Supreme Court did with the EPA ruling.
Kagan, in a scathing dissent joined by the court's two other liberals, insisted that the Clean Air Act, passed by Congress more than 50 years ago, gives the EPA flexibility to address climate change, and she blasted her conservative colleagues for taking it away. The court appoints itself instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy, she wrote. I cannot think of many things more frightening.
First, this is what she wrote in the dissent. This is the part that gets me. First, members of Congress often don't know enough. And no, they don't know enough to regulate sensibly on an issue. Of course, members can and do provide overall direction, but then they rely on all of us, and as all of us rely in our daily lives, on people with greater expertise and experience. Those people are found in agencies. Congress looks to them to make specific judgments about how to achieve its more general objective, and it does so especially through, though by no means exclusively, when an issue has a scientific or technical dimension. It is fascinating to me. She also talks about the East Coast could possibly be swallowed up by the ocean. The reason why this is a big deal to me is because they get it wrong. These agencies get it wrong sometimes. Let's go back, and I know it's a fun conversation. I just had this with somebody in the building this morning to a certain degree about these issues. John Kerry flies everywhere on a private jet to tell you that your carbon footprint is too high. Prince Charles does it. The summit they had on climate change had dozens and dozens of private jets. They didn't even jet pool. Everybody took their own plane to this summit. So, you know, the Obamas just bought a home on the water on the East Coast. Are they worried? Aren't they worried that their house is going to be underwater? I don't. This is a silly principle. When I was a kid in the 1970s out there, trust me on this. You can look it up. You can read it. It was written about the great impending freeze that was coming. It was global cooling. And the world was going to starve because we weren't going to have enough of a thaw to grow food. And so the food shortage was going to happen because of a freeze. So global cooling was the concern in the 1970s and what we were doing to the environment. I respect environmentalism in this regard. All of us should want a clean planet. We all should want to. If you're a patriotic American, we should want a clean America. We shouldn't litter. We shouldn't pollute. We shouldn't do those things. And when you get caught doing those things, you should be punished. Are there companies that have or probably would pollute the water and not be concerned about what they were doing? Sure, there are. There are horrible people everywhere. Just like not you and I probably wouldn't throw things out your car window, but there are people that do it. But the idea that a government agency, based on this mentality, is going to rule over things because they know more than Congress. The president doesn't know everything. But the president surrounds himself with people he believes are experts in areas. He tells them, or he has an agenda and he wants them to do what he wants. But he also has advisors to guide what he wants. That doesn't mean that those advisors should be making the rules. I've got a couple of examples. Vaccine mandates were predicated on hope rather than science, according to Dr. Birx. They hoped the vaccines would work. Now, this is, you know, these are people that wanted vaccines mandated. You're a horrible person if you don't get vaccinated. And by the way, if you're new to the show, I've said it many times. I've been vaccinated. I got vaccinated and boosted. So I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I am an anti-forcing someone to get a vaccine. Do masks mandates work? Bay Area COVID data from June says no. So we are hopeful. How does a mask prevent it? You know, I'm not an anti-mask person either. But when you're forcing people into these situations, these agencies get it wrong. The CDC was hoping the vaccines would work. Can you imagine if the CDC was able to mandate that you have to get a vaccine? The idea that agencies should be making rules, and the problem, and the reason why I bring this up, is because this Supreme Court is making a lot of different decisions. They're making a lot of decisions, and should they be? This is legislating from the bench. I didn't agree with the ruling that favored Barack Obama and Obamacare. I thought I didn't like that ruling. I didn't like the results of that ruling. I didn't like Obamacare. But Chief Justice Roberts, who I know has made a lot of people angry on both sides of the political aisle at times with the things he's done, made a statement in that when they decided that, he wrote something to the effect of, it's not our job to judge whether or not a law is good or bad. Our job is to judge whether it's constitutional. And he went on to say, if you don't like bad laws, stop electing bad lawmakers. And I thought that was a brilliant statement, because that's exactly 100% true. And what you're hearing from Justice Kagan is, she is a climate change person. She thinks climate change is a big issue, and that whether it's constitutional or not, she wants us to have, you want climate change to have to end. And she said, well, we gave them the right. No, we didn't. We elect people to create laws. They are supposed to weigh the unintended consequences, the good and bad in a piece of legislation, the necessity for that piece of legislation, and what it's going to do. And then they are going to pass that law in the House and the Senate. They're going to get it to the president's desk. The president's going to sign it. And then if there are challenges, the Supreme Court has to decide whether or not that law fits within the confines of the U.S. Constitution. That's all they are supposed to do. In this case, you are giving an opinion on what horrible shape the world is in, and so you wanted a different decision. That's not your job. It's scary to me. It's scary to me that Supreme Court justices are literally legislating from the bench. What we're going to do just after 10 o'clock, we are going to talk about whether we're in good economic shape or we're not. We had a great conversation we're going to get back to in just a moment.